All right, guys, welcome to our podcast on Chinese food for thought class. Today, John, Michaela, Reina, and I, Kabir, will be talking about how Chinese food ways have appeared and have developed in places that we have personal connections to. And we hope you learn a little more about how Chinese food ways have developed all over the world and how they've interacted with a bunch of different cultures. I want to start off by like introducing everyone and which particular places they'll be talking about. So Reina will be talking about Nepal and Japan. John will be talking about Chinese food in Ecuador. Michaela will be talking about Chinese food in Jamaica, and I'll be talking about Chinese food in India. I think we should first just start off with a short historical overview, maybe, of like how Chinese food arrived at these places that we're going to be talking about. Anybody, feel free to jump in, guys.
I guess I can start.
Awesome.
Chinese food in Jamaica arrived around the middle of the 1800s, along with a lot of people from China, mainly the southern region near Canton. Essentially, after slavery was abolished in Jamaica and throughout most of the Caribbean, a lot of indentured servants from China came to work the sugar plantations for a source of income. And along with them, they brought obviously their food ways and their culture, which has mixed in with Jamaican culture and cuisine and become its own kind of thing.
For Ecuador, a similar thing. Since it's really new in Ecuador and it more of migrated into Ecuador, it really started in Peru, the version of Chinese food that is in Ecuador. And it was the same time frame about in the late 1800s where they had indentured servants that would go to Peru for the labor shortage and would be working there. And as they started to have more of a in this like new land that they're in, they started to open up restaurants, and those restaurants slowly migrated upwards towards Ecuador.
Yeah, that's really cool, John. And well, Japan has a much longer and deeper history with China. So I think, but talking about Chinese food, so I think, when it really started coming in was during the Edo period, which is the 1600s to like mid 1800s, when trade started increasing with China. And that's when merchants started bringing their cooks to Japan to set restaurants for them when they travel so they can eat, Chinese food in Japan. So, and I think around like 1871, there were like two treaties that were signed by China and Japan, which are the Sino-Japanese Friendship and Trade Treaty, which brought like a really big influx of Chinese immigrants. And that's when Chinatown started popping up and the restaurants were still catered toward Chinese people. But when the Sino-Japanese War started happening, the Chinese immigrants started leaving or declining, and that's when Japanese chefs had to take over these restaurants. And that's when, like the Japanese style Chinese foods like came to be, like ramen, gyoza, all of those things. So yeah, that's how it started in Japan. Let me just move to Nepal really quickly because the history there is not too deep. To be honest, I couldn't really, find anything too deep. But as far as I think a really simple explanation would be that they're neighboring countries, and when the two started interacting, when Chinese people started immigrating to Nepal, they just started, it's cheap there. It's really cheap in Nepal to do anything. So they just, had restaurants. They built their own restaurants and, sorry, give me a second. They built their own restaurants and, that's probably it. That's probably it. I think there isn't too much going on between those two countries. And the food that Chinese people make in those restaurants aren't really catered towards Nepali people. So, unlike the United States where, Chinese food is like, changed to fit their palates. But yeah, sorry that was long because I had two countries, but why don't we, switch to another neighboring country of Nepal, India?
Awesome. No, thank you guys so much for that. So I gotta say, just like Japan, I think India has a very deep and rich history of interaction with China. And I think a lot of that is I want to talk about globalization. It's not we are all in our education systems. We're introduced to globalization as something that happened recently. No, that's not true. It's been happening for centuries. If you guys have heard of the Silk Route, it was this really popular trade route that ran through China, ran through all of Asia. It passed through India. A lot of Chinese food coming to India happened through the Silk Route and through these merchants who would pass through India and Indian merchants who would pass through China. So that's basically how a lot of that's how a lot of Indian exposure to Chinese food happened. But the most popular origin story that you'd find if you were searching today would be about 250 years ago. We're talking 18th century. India was being colonized by the British. Kolkata was the capital. It's a city in east northeastern India. That's kind of the closest you can get to China, viably. So we saw a lot of Chinese immigrants come from southern regions of China to Kolkata in search of, quote unquote, a better life. I'm not sure how that worked out for them, but yeah, the capital of British India, Kolkata, it was a really hustle and bustle place. It was attracting a lot of business. So these people kind of settled there. There were sort of stereotypical roles that they settled into. People from the Hakka region were mainly cobblers and tanners. People from mainland Cantonese areas were like carpenters, and people from the Hubeinese region was like, weirdly enough, like dentists. That's a very specific thing, but that's what I found across a lot of research. But that was for most of the men. Now, where Chinese food in India, like modern, comes into play is for a lot of these men, their wives also wanted to earn something. So what they did was they started setting up a lot of Chinese restaurants. And this is something I think interesting that we'll talk about a lot over this podcast as well, which is how flavors that come from another country to one country adapt really well, adapt really often to the flavor profile of that country. And that's exactly what happens in India. I'm sure today, if a Chinese person who's grown up only in China came to India and tried Chinese food, they would never be able to guess it's Chinese food. But hey, to us, that's what it is. Yeah.
That's awesome. I think since you brought up flavors, why don't we, kind of move into that topic and kind of talk about, how flavors have been adapted in each country, maybe their foods that have been influenced by, Chinese cuisine. Yeah, if anyone has any, if anyone wants to start sharing.
I guess I can start with that. It was actually really interesting kind of seeing the background of how they tried to adapt in this new environment. I read that they imported a lot of the native seeds from China to Peru and Ecuador, where it was where they started making the restaurants. And so a lot of the ingredients that they would use in making Chinese food actually became part of the local cuisine as well. So then it was kind of push and pull and kind of in adapting their food ways. And so now you can see that they have bok choy that's really av readily available for them to use. And although in Ecuador it's still a bit of a there aren't many of these Chinese restaurants. They so like the type of food that they actually offer is quite low. The really common ones would be wonton soup. They like sweet and sour chicken and wontons, and then they also a big one is of course fried rice, which it just has a bunch of things in it.
That's awesome. I think for India also, it's weird because I think Chinese food, at least from what we've learned about in this course, really often there a lot of the meat is beef and pork. But when Chinese food came to India, obviously India's a Hindu majority country, like you don't really have a lot of beef because Hindus consider that sacred. And since there's a very large Muslim population as well, you don't see a lot of pork being made as well. So like in modern day Chinese food in India, the main protein is, well, it's chicken. And so like the way like Chinese food has evolved in India is that you like what Chinese food is to Indians is like the sauces that stuff is cooked in. Everything is like stir-fried and then thrown into like one of like a few different types of sauces. And well, yeah, it's basically like Indian vegetables and Indian spices, but in like the sauce that is considered to be Chinese in flavor.
I think it's really interesting how like you both talked about how like kind of these foods are adapted to fit the local the fit what's available. Because one thing about like Jamaica and the southern region of China, although the climate might is kind of like similar, the foods that are readily available aren't. So a lot of the Chinese people who came to Jamaica had to use what ingredients they could to make sure that like they could still taste they could still eat food that they grew up with or that they really enjoyed. And one interesting dish that I found was there was a chicken dish that was popular within southern China that used Chinese sour plums. However, going to Jamaica, there aren't really Chinese sour plums there. However, they did find out that you could substitute that with tamarind, which is a I can't really describe tamarind. I don't know how to describe it. It's like a bean-ish type thing. It comes in a pod and they're like yeah, but it was very interesting to see how like even in specific dishes there can be like one main ingredient that can be substituted out, like to fit wherever you are. And what you guys were saying about like the current state of like Chinese food in your given countries, like I remember reading an article and someone was saying how people who grow up eating Chinese Jamaican food, Chinese people who enjoy Chinese Jamaican food might go to Beijing and think that the Chinese food there is completely different than what they know from Jamaica, what they know from what they've grown up with.
Yeah, no, I feel like tamarind is like we use it quite a bit in like Indian cuisine too. It's like got this like I agree with you. It's a very like hard to describe flavor. It's like sweet yet like salty yet like something else. Like I would call it umami, but I don't know if that's like the right flavor profile for it. But yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah, tamarind, it's really good, but it's hard to describe.
Yeah.
That's so interesting how they would like substitute things, how it was like chicken and then not having the sweet and sour plum. I guess it's really weird that they imported the seeds into like Peru and Ecuador and just started to like cultivate their own like I guess the ingredients that they would use back home.
I think that's really interesting that like it was a matter of importing the seeds and growing the same food that you had. That's really interesting.
Yeah, even like the products and stuff they like Peruvian food and Ecuadorian food. Like you can see that they use soy sauce now, which was like they didn't used to use a lot of the ingredients as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting because at least in the case of Japan, I think since they're really close to each other, they didn't really have issues when it came to ingredients. And, both countries don't have any like issues with any kind of meat or anything. I said any so many times. But I think the biggest issue for Japanese people was the spice because Japanese cuisine is usually just like salt and sweet. They don't really put like chili or anything like that in their food. So when Japanese chefs started making Chinese food, I think, it started it's not it shouldn't be called Chinese food. It's even in Japanese, there are two terms for Chinese food and Chinese Japanese food. So Chinese food would be 中国料理and Chinese Japanese food would be 中華料理. So it's really different. So the Japanese people love mapo tofu and a bunch of other Chinese foods, but mapo tofu is usually really spicy and like tingly, but the Japanese one doesn't have that. Yeah, so some of the Japanese foods that have Chinese influence like ramen or gyoza, ramen isn't Chinese at all. I think Chinese people would look at ramen and wouldn't really consider it their food. But again, Japanese people say ramen and they write it in katakana, which is the alphabet used for foreign loan words. So I kind of shifted my point kind of shifted here, but basically, you know, Japanese people's issues with Chinese food was the spice. So even if you eat ramen, it's not spicy at all. It's just pure salt. And I guess another food that, you know, Japanese people take influence from China is gyoza, which I talked about earlier. And I find it really interesting that dumplings, so many different countries have taken influence, you know, have made their own kind of dumpling. So I think from here, I want to shift to Nepal, where momo is one of the most famous Nepali cuisines, but it takes influence from Tibet. And, you know, the word momo actually comes from a Chinese word called bobo, I think, which means bun. And, you know, I just find it really interesting how both Japan and Nepal have taken, you know, influence from dumplings and have made their own thing. Nepali people put their own spices. Japanese people remove the spices and kind of like, it's a really interesting, you know, building. Like, it's like a Lego where you just like build your own dumpling kind of sort. Yeah.
I found that actually really interesting when you were like talking about the spice and that not being a very major like taste profile in Japan, because spice was part of the main reason that Chinese food succeeded in India, because like, you know, like Indian people, like generally the flavor profile is that spicy food is nice, like people like spicy food. So like especially food from like the Sichuan region in China came to India a lot. But the funny thing was, it has today been bastardized to something that is called Szechuan in India. And it's like, they don't even use like Sichuan peppercorns or any, like, because that's like a numbing spice. There's none of that numbing sort of like taste. Oh, my mouth is watering when I'm talking about that. But like, yeah, there's none of that like numbing spice in the spicy Chinese food in India. But they kind of just substituted with like spice. Any sort of spicy sauce, anything that has been stir-fried in the spicy sauce is just automatically called Szechuan in Chinese Indian food. So yeah, I found that like an interesting contrast between what you were saying about Japan and how I've perceived Chinese food in India.
Yeah, like even in Nepal, I think it's the same thing. I think Nepal and Nepali people and Indian people have similar palates when it comes to spice. If you go to like the restaurants owned by Chinese people in Nepal, the flavor isn't really adapted to Nepali people's palates, I think, because they can handle the spice and they're really open to trying new foods, unlike maybe in the United States. And yeah, like it's really interesting how some places, you know, just don't have, at least from my experience in Nepal, you know, they don't really try to adapt to the Nepali people's palates.
I was really interested in when you were talking about the naming of like the naming distinctions in Japanese, because in Spanish, they call Chinese restaurants chifa, which is basically just the Spanish pronunciation of the Chinese pinyin. It was Cantonese. And so I just like found it really interesting, like what do they call Chinese restaurants or like Chinese food in those countries?
In India, it's called like either desi Chinese, which is like, desi is basically a word that is like ubiquitously used to describe anything of South Asian descent. So it's called like desi Chinese, or Chindian, which is just like, you know, a portmanteau of like Chinese in India. Yeah.
I don't really know. I think in Jamaica, it's just called Chinese food. I'm not really sure. Or Chinese Jamaican food. I don't know if it, like, to my knowledge, I don't think there's like any portmanteau or like cool way to say it.
Do you guys have like favorite dishes in like Chinese food in the place that we're talk in the places that we're all like respectively talking about? Do you guys have any like favorite dishes or stuff that you really crave?
I just really like, I mean, they love to make the fried rice. That's like, I guess, the biggest Chinese food that would be in Ecuador. My only thing would be, so I would think, as you guys were talking about spice earlier, because South Americans, we like spicy things. We add ahi to like almost all of our foods. But the Chinese food isn't that spicy. It's like very mild, I guess, in my opinion. So I was like, they had a lot of had a lot of opportunity to throw in some spice.
For me, I would say it's like there's this really unique dish that I honestly have not seen anything similar to anywhere else in the world, which is like honey chili potatoes, which is basically like think about like French fries tossed in like a sweet and spicy sauce, and it's considered like, Chindian, desi Chinese. And like one thing I have to say about the one thing that I do want to point out about like Chinese food in India that I forgot to point out earlier is that you don't really like, sure, you can have like authentic Chinese food like when you go to like a really expensive restaurant or something, but Chinese food in India, Chindian or Desi Chinese, is mainly a working man's food. It is cheap, it is sold mainly as street food. You'd expect like students to just like go and have it as a snack after school, or like the working common man to have it after like for like lunch in during lunch break or like after work or something. It's supposed to be really cheap yet really like fulfilling food. It's like it really like satisfies a craving in you because it's like sweet and spicy and salty. Those are flavors that really like cater to like cravings.
Yeah, I think it's interesting seeing how like Chinese food like currently interacts with like the locations it's in, because in Jamaica a lot of people, well, like there's a sizable population of people who identify as both Chinese or Chinese, both Chinese and Jamaican, or Chinese and Jamaican of African descent or Indigenous descent. So I was reading articles about people who are Chinese Jamaican and their dinner tables when they were growing up, and a lot of people were saying how it's rather than like a huge like fusion dish, it's like you have certain Chinese dishes and then certain Jamaican dishes on the table. Like you might have jerk chicken right next to like a traditional Chinese dish that has come through people like going there in the past. So I think it's really interesting seeing how like not only is there like a fusion where there are things that like mix, but also there are some things that just work well together rather than becoming one thing, they're separate, but they work well.
Yeah, Kabir, when you were talking about like Desi Chinese food being like a working man's food, that just reminded me of like how in Japan, like actual Chinese food, like the Chinese food is like you can find them in like really high class restaurants. It's considered like a luxury to go with your family to go eat in a Chinese restaurant in that like, what's that table called again? The Lazy Susan or something?
The lazy Susan, the rotating thing,
Yeah,
right?
having those tables apparently kind of already signifies like luxury, and Japanese people go to those restaurants to get like as like a as like a luxurious experience. But on the other hand, Chinese Japanese food or chuka ryori is like cheaper, and you can find them in like family restaurants, and it's really interesting to see that like contrast between those two foods. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that exists in like almost everywhere that a food from a certain country has like come to another country, food from a certain culture has come to another culture. In like any of those cultures, you can have the food of the other culture like in like the authentic way. Like, we talked a lot about authenticity. It's like hard to define, but you know what I'm trying to get at. Like, something that's like original to the culture that it's coming from. Sure, you can get that too. But personally, I found it like way more interesting to think about like how those foods have become, quote unquote, unauthentic, inauthentic, whatever. Like, how they've like adapted to those cultures. So yeah. So it is very interesting to see the contrast between those two.
Currently, it's more of a new phenomenon having a lot of the Chinese restaurants open up in Ecuador. Because I remember when I went in like 2017, like a long time ago, those I didn't even know that Ecuador had Chinese restaurants. Like there was just none there because we lived in a more smaller town. But then when I went recently, we were just driving, and someone was like, "Oh, do you want to eat at Chifa?" And I was like, "What is that? What is the Chifa?" And then they were explaining to me, and I was like, "Oh, it's this like a Chinese restaurant." I was like, "I didn't know that they had Chinese restaurants here." And then reading up upon it, it was like, "Oh, because more when relations between Ecuador and China became to become like it bettered in like the 2010s, so then they allowed more immigration into Ecuador, and same likewise Ecuadorians to China. I don't think you need a visa for like 30 days." And then so then more of these restaurants started opening up, so I'm excited to go back and see if there's even more, or if they offer more foods, or how it diversifies.
I think that's really interesting how it like there's the influence of like Chinese food coming from Peru that's been there since like the 1800s, and then now you have like more relations between China and Ecuador, so there like are more there's like the influence of Chinese food coming from that way. I think that's really interesting how it's like coming from two different sides but like all converging into this one country.
Because it's gonna be even different now because immigration is more open, because the food that came the Chinese food that came from Peru is more from the Guangdong region, and so it's more of like just one section of China. That's where a lot of the immigrants came from. And so now that the immigration laws are more laxed, it can come from all sorts of places, all provinces, and so it'll be a even more mix of Chinese food.
I find it interesting to hear your all three of your perspectives on Chinese food in these places, because I feel like Ecuador and Jamaica have a relatively shorter history with Chinese food than like India and Japan and Nepal, simply because of like geographical proximity. But it's interesting to see how like Chinese food, like when you're talking about in Ecuador and when you're talking about in Jamaica, Michaela, I find that your descriptions are like way more, I don't want to use this word, but like authentic of like original Chinese food than like what I consider like Chinese food in like India. Because like in India, it's had like so much longer to adapt to local taste buds. So, yeah.
Yeah, I just love hearing about Chinese food in Jamaica and Ecuador because at least I grew up around Chinese food basically. It wasn't really surprising to me to see Chinese food around the places that I lived. Even now in the United States, we have, even in the middle of Iowa, we have a Chinese restaurant. But just hearing your fascination, John, when like someone asked you to go eat, in a Chinese restaurant, like it opens my perspective more. It just opens my perspective more.
It was definitely an odd experience because it was the last thing on my mind. Eating Chinese food was like the last option that I even would have thought of, even being a Chinese major. And so hearing that was an option, I was like, "What? This is I'm learning something new about my own like mother country."
Yeah, I think that's about a lot of what we wanted to say. I think we covered a lot of like history and like modern Chinese food in the countries and places that we're all talking about. And I've personally found it very interesting, like in particular when Michaela was talking about like tamarind being substituted for Chinese sour plums. That like kind of like got me thinking, like in like other places, what kind of ingredients for like not just Chinese food, but like any other food come into any other country, what kind of ingredients can be like substituted while you still maintain that label of like Chinese food or like whichever culture the food is from. So I found that very interesting. And I found it very interesting to see in like how in like Ecuador Chinese foods are like a recent phenomenon, right, John? Japan and India obviously have like a very, and Nepal too, thanks to the Silk Route and all the influence from like its own country and its neighbors, like has all of these countries have a lot of like have a long history with China, and we've had a lot of time to like develop these flavors, adapt them to local taste buds. I hope that people who are listening to the podcast get something to think about, like, you know, Chinese food maybe in their own country. And if you're in America, I think there's a lot to think about like Chinese American food, especially. Like that's something that is talked about quite a lot often, and how like it's very inauthentic. I feel a little conflicted using the term inauthentic because like, well, that's a whole different, I think that's a whole different podcast, so I won't dive into that too much
That's
right
the
now.
next episode.
Yes, sir. But I think we've talked about quite a lot today, and I hope that our listeners have a lot to think about after this.
I just want to say, like, it's so great that we got to talk about so many different countries, and like the impact of Chinese food in our respective countries. And I just never would have known if we didn't have this podcast about, like, Chinese food's influence on India, Jamaica, and Ecuador. So I think this was a very valuable exchange of knowledge and experience and information. So
I agree. It was honestly really amazing to hear the rich history that Chinese food had in Nepal, Japan, and India. Kind of seeing that as like the future of what might it be in Ecuador, how it might evolve in Ecuador, and how it might evolve with the taste of Ecuadorians, and even seeing the difference between the Chinese food in Jamaica and Ecuador, how although it started in similar times, like in Jamaica it had that substitution, and in Ecuador it more of just decided, oh no, we're gonna bring our own ingredients.
yeah, I definitely think I learned a lot in this like time, because I think it's easy to kind of see things in the context of like what you've seen growing up and kind of leave it at that. But like learning about the other experience of other people and like kind of being able to see stuff outside of like your own box, I think that's really cool. Like learning more about like the Chinese and Ecuadorian relations that you were talking about, John, how like there are currently like more people from China immigrating to Ecuador, and also with you, what you were talking about, Kabir and Reina, the long-standing history that China already has with Japan, India, and Nepal. I think it's really interesting seeing how all of these things work together to create this kind of like difference of food ways that we can just sit here and observe.
Awesome. Thank you guys for coming and talking with all of us about this. And to everybody who's listening, thank you for tuning in. And that's us signing off. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yay.